May the words of my mouth and the meditation of our hearts be always acceptable to you, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. So as Mark tells the story, Jesus and his disciples are at the temple in Jerusalem. It's days away from his crucifixion, looking at one of the most opulent temples ever built. It had been constructed of massive stones. There were walls covered in sheets of gold. Josephus wrote that the gold on the temple reflected so fierce a blaze of fire that those who tried to look at it were forced to turn away. It seemed in the distance like a mountain covered in snow, for any part not covered in gold was dazzling white. Herod had built a temple to impress the rich and powerful rulers of the day. And the disciples had probably never seen anything like it. Look, teacher, what large stones and what a large building. There they stood, gaping in wonder and amazement. And I would imagine that Jesus' words turned their wonder and awe into shock and consternation. Not one stone will be left here upon another. All will be thrown down. So when we hear this gospel, perhaps what comes to mind is the end times, preaching and forecasts, and books like the Left Behind series. You just Google end times and there are a staggering number of books about that event. There are a lot of people who are worrying about the end of the world. But really, you don't have to subscribe to any of the end time theories and predictions that know that Jesus' words do ring true. As the Greeks noted, all things do pass, the river flows, and life is brief. All you need to do is travel to Europe, see the remnants of the great and glorious buildings that have fallen and are now in ruins, and they're just there for the tourists to come and visit. Right here, we just need to turn on our evening news and we can see that fire is destroying entire communities and towns in California. And we know it in our lives. There's a remarkable video going around right now on social media. It is set in a community where the neighbors don't seem to get along. They all look at each other with mistrust. And that kind of sets the tone for the whole video. But then the rains come, and the homes begin to flood, lives are in danger, and the video goes on to tell how those who had looked at each other with mistrust and contempt came together to rescue and save each other. It ends with the tagline, "Why does it take a calamity for people to come together?" And I watched this video, and as trite as it might be, it speaks to this eternal message of God's vision for all of us, loving God and loving our neighbor, whoever that neighbor might be. So I wonder if Jesus is not just proclaiming destruction and calamity. I wonder if he wasn't also trying to get the disciples and us to flip the script, to change what gets our attention, to look beyond simply what we see, to realize that the life of God's people was not founded on bricks and on mortar. It was founded and is found in the love of people and God's love for us. So look beyond the stones, beyond the buildings, beyond what people are wearing, or the color of their skin, or their sexual orientation, or what they do for a living, or however it is that we judge people. The gospel today is reminding us that the old world is passing away, that there is a new heaven and a new earth rooting itself in this weary old world. And Jesus is in our midst, and he is changing everything. God's love is not found in a building. No matter how grand or how glorious. It is found in community and in love. And we are being asked to be agents of hope and of change, reaching out to neighbors and strangers, not just in bad times or when we're frightened or scared, but every day. When I was thinking about what to say this morning, I kept coming back to this place, Trinity Cathedral, and this community. And so some of you may know I went a little crazy last year, and I went back to school. And as part of that, I am currently working on a project called a congregational study. And it's exactly like what it sounds. I am studying all of you. I'm looking at the numbers, I'm looking at communication patterns, I'm going to be interviewing different people in the congregation, and any number of things. But the other part that I've been doing is looking at the history of this cathedral and how that history has impacted our story today. And so far, it has been an absolutely fascinating journey, and I am still learning about the history from those who are here and from archival materials. And what I've discovered so far is the incredible faith and resilience of this community. I've learned that as a city died around this cathedral, and membership scattered, and money to keep this place afloat became almost non-existent, this sacred space that people had worshiped and prayed in for generations was so very close to closing its doors and having a for sale sign right out in front of that building. But a small community, and I do mean small, there was probably 60 people that would attend on a Sunday morning, kept this place alive, not only as a place of worship, but it became a center for arts and music and social justice. Over time, the city became alive again once around us. The condominiums were built behind Trinity Cathedral, and people began to move back into the downtown area. Once again, people were finding their way to the sacred space to pray and to worship together, only to see the interior gutted by a fire. But again, the community came together, even stronger and even more committed to our mission and to our lives together. We learned, the people of Trinity Cathedral learned the hard way that we are more than a beautiful building, that wherever we gather to pray in community, that's where God is. We learn that we are the people of God. We are the church in the world. Or as the dean wrote in his commentary this week, we are the living stones of the temple. We know absolutely that the love of God transcends places and is found in our love of one another. In Paul's letter to the Hebrews, he writes, "Let us consider how to provoke one another to love and good deeds, not neglecting to meet together, but encouraging one another." The gift of Christ is not one that we keep to ourselves. It is meant to be shared with everyone. And that's exactly what this community did in response to uncertainty and hardship. And that's what this community is still doing, keeping our doors open wide as a place of worship and welcome for all of God's children. There will be wars and rumors of war, events that will shake our faith and humanity. There will be death. There will be worry, anxiety, fear, and injustice. We are reminded to not be alarmed. It is not the end. And when those come who try and make us fearful and afraid, afraid of the future, or telling us that we need to be fearful of the other, Jesus says, do not listen to them and do not be frightened. When Jesus appeared to the disciples after the resurrection, he told them, peace be with you. Peace, not injustice or hate. Peace, not chaos or confusion. Peace, not fear or anxiety. Jesus came among us bringing a message of peace even in the midst of uncertainty and fear. And that is still the message today. When we exchange the peace during the service, it is a sign that church has shared in the harshest of times. And we forget the power and the history of that moment, of this moment. It's been practiced in times of great suffering since the very beginning of the church. When we take the hand of one another and say, may the peace of the Lord be with you, and we respond, and also with you. Each time, each and every time we do that, we are offering testimony to Christ's peace for you and for me. And we serve as witnesses to this crazy old world that we live in, that we are God's people, loving one another as we are so loved. And that he, that God is in our midst, right here and right now. Amen.